Hare Krishna. Narahari, you led the kirtan so nicely. Huh? Very nice. So he is also appreciating your kirtan, saying Jai. And Parikshit? Hari Bol. Parikshit? Is that Dandavat Parikrama? Huh? Dada. Dada or Dandavat? Hare Krishna. So, I didn't see you before. What's your name? Oh, okay, I heard of you. Right. Yeah. Okay, yeah, right, they told me. Right. Yeah, I heard many wonderful things about you. Yeah, I was very impressed to see how everything is developing here so nicely. I was very enlivened. I sent a message on Facebook today, and it's about my trip to Columbus. Tomorrow I'll also send one, a more comprehensive one. Wow. Did you do it? Yeah, wonderful. Thank you, Bridge. Do you have a name for him? Huh? No? Okay. Do you know him? I can name him? Okay. I can name him as Bridges. Creation. Bread's creation. All right? Thank you. So we are supposed to have a program on Srila Prabhupada night. I presume none of you met Srila Prabhupada personally. But recently, during our GBC meeting, we discussed one point, that one should not feel, a devotee in ISKCON should not feel that he or she did not meet Srila Prabhupada. When you are following Srila Prabhupada's instructions, you not only met Srila Prabhupada, you are with Prabhupada. Because that's how a spiritual personality becomes manifest. Like in ISKCON, Prabhupada is our... In ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada, as the founder acharya, is the guru of everyone. Srila Prabhupada established ISKCON in order to continue his mission. Why Srila Prabhupada came? Prabhupada came to fulfill Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction. Are you all aware of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction? That Krishna consciousness movement will spread all over the world, in every town and village. Now, if you read it, of course you were not there at the time, most of you, if you read that about 50 years back, could you believe that such a thing could happen? Krishna consciousness movement would spread all over the world in every town and village. But today, do we have any doubt? At least Krishna consciousness movement has spread all over the world, that we are seeing. I mean, we may have doubt whether it will happen in every town and village. But 50 years back, people couldn't even imagine that Krishna consciousness movement would spread all over the world in this way. Now see what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made the prediction, but he himself didn't do anything about that. Like, he spread it all over India, but he just mentioned that it will happen. Now, in order to fulfill that prediction, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent Srila Prabhupada. How can we say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent Srila Prabhupada? Now look at how amazingly it happened. Prabhupada comes to America at the age of 70. And he practically started to preach Krishna consciousness when he was about 71. At the age of 70, he came to America. At the age of 71, he started to preach Krishna consciousness. And at the age of 82, he left the planet. Now, within this 10-11 years' time, see what Srila Prabhupada did. Isn't it amazing that a 70-year-old man comes and spread Krishna consciousness all over the world in 10 years' time? Let us consider, is it humanly possible? Has there been any instance in the past of such a happening? What to speak of a spiritual institution growing in this way by one person? But even materially, did anything happen? We may think of, you know, Henry Ford, we may think of Rockefeller, we may think of various other, we can even think of different warriors like Alexander the Great, Napoleon Bonaparte. But what is the extent of their achievement? Henry Ford, whatever he did, was only in America during his lifetime. And even if you look at the spiritual, or as we are talking about the warriors, Alexander wanted to conquer the world. But what did he do? From Macedonia, in the eastern border of Greece, eastern part of Greece, you know, to Turkey, Egypt, part of Iran, tried to enter into India. Like, you know, just a wanted to conquer the world, but what did he do? And when he went to India, by the time he went to India, he was practically finished. He couldn't realize that, you know, in India he would face such an opposition. If we look at the religions, Christianity took 2,000 years to develop the way it has developed. Islam took 1,000 years to develop the way it did. But what Srila Prabhupada did, all over the world, in just 10 years' time. Now, how could such a thing happen? I mean, you all are seeing, just to establish, so many of you, just to establish a temple in Columbus, you all are struggling. Right? There are places where they are taking 10, 12 years to just build one temple in 10 years. Whereas Srila Prabhupada established temples all over the world, in all the major cities of the world. And in this way, Srila Prabhupada actually established the foundation of ISKCON. Prabhupada knew that he won't be able to do it, to spread this movement all over the world in every town and village during his lifetime. But in order to make it happen, Srila Prabhupada established ISKCON. So that the mission, his purpose can continue even after his disappearance from the planet. And that's why Srila Prabhupada put so much emphasis on this institution. Like, look at it, like, Prabhupada did not really put himself in the forefront. Many people didn't even know who is the person behind Hare Krishna movement. In India, many people don't even know. Like, you go to Vrindavan, ISKCON temple is Angrezo ka Mandir. In Mayapur, it is Sahib Mat. Right? Prabhupada is nowhere in the picture. And Prabhupada didn't want to put himself in the picture or in the forefront. Prabhupada knew what really will matter is the establishment of the institution. And that's why Prabhupada put the maximum emphasis, all his emphasis, on the institution of ISKCON. And Prabhupada was very emphatic that this institution should be managed collectively with a group of senior devotees. That's the concept of GBC. And to reinforce the foundation, Prabhupada gave the emphasis on the books. These are the two things that Prabhupada established. Institution of ISKCON and the books, BBT. Books are the basis. Prabhupada himself mentioned about the importance of books. Like, if things are not properly clear, established and clarified through the basis of the books, then there is a possibility of deviation. There's a possibility of deviation from the main purpose. We see, you know, just consider, Christianity has been divided into so many groups, right? Similarly, Islam also has been divided into so many groups. Now consider, if Jesus' teachings were properly established, could that happen? everybody could see what Jesus wanted. Now they're speculating what Jesus may want or might have wanted. No one really knows what Jesus actually wanted. We don't really get to hear about what Jesus' teachings are. Christianity is simply based on the descriptions or the narrations of the apostles, who actually came many years after. They didn't, many of them didn't really have any contact with Jesus. Now just consider, even in this generation, if the books were not there and people had to convey Prabhupada's teachings, what would have happened? Wouldn't it get, you know, not only watered down, wouldn't it get even contaminated with all kinds of notions and ideas? That's why Prabhupada was so emphatic about the books. Books are the basis. So these two things are established side by side, the Institute of ISKCON and the books with Bhaktivedanta purport. And consider, in this Vedic movement, I'm just saying not only ISKCON, just consider the Vedic presentation, the presentation of Vedic wisdom. In this age, which books are more important than Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita? And all these three books have been presented by Srila Prabhupada with his Bhaktivedanta purport. Like Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary study, preliminary understanding of spiritual topic. Srimad Bhagavatam is the advanced course of this spiritual topic. And Chaitanya Charitamrita is the practical demonstration of that teaching of Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through his own activities and instructions, and through his devotees, his association and interaction with his devotees, he established what bhakti is. He demonstrated it personally. So in this way you can see that Srila Prabhupada has created the perfect arrangement. Established an institution, structured the institution in such a way that it will be able to withstand the onslaught of time. With time, things disintegrate, deteriorate. But Srila Prabhupada structured the institution in such a way through the concept of GBC. For that matter, we can consider that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also established an institution. He also could see, to fulfill that mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is not a job of one person during his one lifetime. This is a mission that will continue. It will take generations after generations. Therefore, we need an institution. And he also told his followers to collectively manage the institution through a governing body. But unfortunately, most of them couldn't understand the purpose of that. Many of them thought, many leading devotees of that time, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's main followers, they considered, how can a spiritual institution continue to function without an acharya? therefore, disregarding Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's instruction that they should collectively manage the institution, they appointed an acharya. And unfortunately, when the acharya fell down, you can well imagine what will be the consequence. If in the institution the head falls, then what will happen to the institution? It will be finished. And that's exactly what happened to Gauriyamata. When that acharya fell down, that they actually divided into two groups. And but like when this acharya fell down, then the structure actually collapsed. And then what happened? Then everybody wanted to become acharya. Not everybody in the sense, many of the leading devotees. And as a result of that, they have their own little moths, and they were just continuing. But that massive preaching mission stopped. And Prabhupada told us not to make the same mistake that his guru, his godbrothers made after Guru Maharaj's disappearance. That means that they did not follow the concept of collective management. Therefore, Prabhupada took a lot of gave a lot of emphasis in the concept of GBC. Prabhupada just made it very, very clear that through this collective concept of management, you continue the institution. This is how Prabhupada actually passed the legacy onto his followers. And mind you, today, in spite of so many difficulties, 35 years after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, ISKCON is still there. And ISKCON is going strong. And it's not that in ISKCON we did not have spiritual difficulties. You know, many leaders unfortunately fell down. In Gauriyamata there was one leader fell down. But in ISKCON so many of them fell down. But still ISKCON is going strong. ISKCON has been, I mean, it has been affected. ISKCON has been affected by that. You know, when these big leaders fell down, there was massive damage. But ISKCON did not disintegrate. ISKCON continued. What actually happened? A leader fell down. Okay, that area has been affected, but ISKCON structure remained intact because so many other leaders were there to take care. And so this is how we can see the importance of, or rather the expertise of Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada's organizational ability. And he actually inherited it from his Guru Maharaj. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur actually gave this idea to Srila Prabhupada. And the thing is that we can see that out of his so many disciples, and many of them were extremely brilliant individuals, very, very exalted spiritually, but they didn't understand this very simple concept that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to establish. Only Srila Prabhupada understood it. And that's, and we can see how ISKCON has been protected because of this arrangement of Srila Prabhupada. And ISKCON will continue. Because the worst phase in ISKCON actually was just the tissue. The worst phase, that's all. The worst period of ISKCON actually was after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance. And Prabhupada himself said, after an acharya leaves the planet, there is bound to be crisis. You know, at that time, we heard, and we thought it was just a statement, like in the past it happened, in ISKCON it will not happen. At least I thought that way. Of course, at that time, we never thought that Prabhupada would leave. You know, everybody was thinking that Prabhupada will be here with us for many, many years. But that statement that an acharya, that there is bound to be crisis when an acharya leaves the planet, we never thought that it could happen in ISKCON. But then we saw that it happened. Soon after Prabhupada's disappearance, we had another kind of problem. Anyway, let's not get into those details. We had this problem, and many a times, you know, it seemed that ISKCON will not be able to withstand that onslaught. But then we saw, like, one after another difficulty came, crisis came. Although it appeared to be insurmountable, but in course of time, it has been overcome. And as a result of that, ISKCON became stronger. One crisis, as the crisis came, and it seemed that it would be, you know, ISKCON will not be able to, you know, face that or overcome that. But in course of time, it disappeared. The crisis disappeared, we had been able to overcome, and ISKCON became stronger. In a way, I feel at times that it was something like, when the crisis came, it looked like a stumbling block. But eventually, as we overcome that crisis, that what appeared to be like a stumbling block at one time became a stepping stone. And anyway, so the point I am trying to make is that Srila Prabhupada came to fulfill Mahaprabhu's prediction, and Srila Prabhupada made the arrangement that that mission would continue to further the purpose of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And eventually we'll see that Krishna consciousness spread all over the world in every town and village. And that's why ISKCON is there. That's why Prabhupada created ISKCON. And ISKCON means a family. ISKCON means a spiritual institution. Prabhupada was very emphatic about that. That we are personal. Our dealings are personal as opposed to impersonal. Mayavadis are impersonalist, but we are personalist. We are persons and we are dealing with persons. And that means relationship. It's a family. And who is at the head of the family? Srila Prabhupada. And all of us are going to be related to each other through Srila Prabhupada. Like in our generations, we are Prabhupada's sons and daughters. In your generations, you are Prabhupada's grandchildren. Next generation will be Prabhupada's great-grandchildren. In this way, the family will keep on expanding and the relationship will continue to grow sweeter and sweeter. And eventually one day we'll find that, you know, like the whole world has become Krishna conscious. Not that the whole world will become Krishna conscious, but at least the whole world is functioning under the structure of Krishna consciousness. Once in Vrindavan, one night in Vrindavan, I used to be with Srila Prabhupada from 12 to 2. One of us used to be with Srila Prabhupada all the time. And at night, just one of us had to be there because we always stayed with Srila Prabhupada. One of us always had to be there. And not just be there, be awake. And so my shift was from 12 to 2. Many a night Prabhupada didn't sleep. And Prabhupada used to talk. In one such night, Prabhupada was telling me, he was lamenting that so much is there to do and he has become so sick. So when Prabhupada started to speak like that, I tried to console him, saying, Prabhupada, what you have done, what you have achieved is inconceivable. You should not think that anything is left to be done. Will you please relax? Then Prabhupada said, no, what I have done is the 50%. And the other 50% is to establish Varnashram. And then Prabhupada said, not that everybody will become a devotee. Those who will not become devotees, for them we need Varnashram. Anyway, Prabhupada himself pointed out that not that everybody will become a devotee. Those who will not become devotees, for them we need Varnashram. Well, they may create a model of Varnashram for others. You know, it's like a prototype. They may create a model, but ultimately the Varnashram is actually for, you know, structuring the rest of the society. And like, for example, you know, devotees are Vaishnavas. They may follow the ashram situation, but varna situation is not important to them. In Varnashram, one may become devotee. Within the Varnashram structure, one may be a devotee, but not that everybody in Varnashram will become a devotee. But the thing is that it will be managed and guided by the devotees. They will be on top. Because the devotees have to lead the world. Like, at the most we can say that the devotees can become brahmanas or kshatriyas who will work under the guidance of the brahmanas. They can also become vaishyas. The devotees may assume the role of a vaishya, may assume the role of a kshatriya. But every kshatriya and every vaishya may not become a devotee. So, I mean, that's the thing that I understood from Prabhupada at that time. At the most, there is a business class. At the most. Militaries are not kshatriya. They're at the most mercenaries. Kshatriyas don't accept an occupation for the sake of salary. That's a Sudra's business. Militaries are not Kshatriyas, but they have the semblance to the Kshatriyas. Like, yes, that should be the kshatriya. But the thing is, you see, kshatriya means king. The army general or military general is not the king. They are just following the commands of the politicians. Right? And Vaishyas, yes, you see, like today's, if you look at today's society, the most of the society is actually Sudra. Maybe dignified Sudras. But most of the societies are Sudra. Some are Vaishyas. But no Kshatriya. Prabhupada is creating the Brahmanas through ISKCON. But one class is missing. The most important class. As Kshatriyas. And in this democratic structure, there is no room for a Kshatriya. At the most, they can become mafias. Mafias are actually close to the Kshatriya. You follow their modus operandi. Like, you pay them money, you pay them tax, they'll give you protection. I mean, at least that was the that was the real concept of the mafias. But now it has also been degenerated. So the point is, you see, a kshatriya, you know, how a kshatriya will function? He will not go and buy something or bake something. He'll say, I want it. Right. I want it. Either you give it to me or come and fight with me. Now, does the society allow that kind of mentality or attitude? No. Therefore, you know, in simple words I can say, in order to establish Varnashram, we have to first get rid of democracy. In the democratic structure, the Varnashram cannot be established. By the people, for the people, and of the people, the mass is ignorant. What can the ignorance mass create? And how can the ignorant mass decide what is good for them? Right? And that's what is happening. In today's world, you see, in democratic world, what is happening? The political leaders are simply bluffing or bribing the people to get the vote. They're giving them all kinds of assurance. You give me vote, I'll do this, I'll do this, I'll do that for you. In simple words, can you allow the school children to elect their teacher? I mean, if you allow the school children to elect their teacher, you won't get a teacher, you'll get something else. Right? And see who they're electing. They're electing people who do not have any training. You know, running a country, it's a very difficult job. Right? But did they get trained up for that? All they have learned is how to give a very effective speech to motivate the people. That's about the only thing that they master. And they mobilize, motivate the mass. You know, I mean, rather than, I won't say motivate. They kind of win the confidence of the mass just by their speech. And people give them vote. And they take some other means also. Somebody comes to power and gives facilities to poor class of people. Okay, yeah. Give this benefit, give this that benefit to the poor. And most of the society are underprivileged. So they will vote for those people. Anyway, so, I mean, since you brought up that point, you know, like, or rather, since you brought up that point, that ISKCON doesn't need to, ISKCON may structure itself through Varnashram, but it won't serve the ultimate purpose. Varnashram is actually is meant to structure the human society. From that perspective also you can see who are the devotees. Devotees are essentially in the mode of goodness, right? Unless and until one comes to the mode of goodness, one cannot become a devotee. Tada rajas tamo bhava kamo lobha dayascha je cheto etair anabiddham sthitam satye prasidati evam prasanna manaso bhagavad bhakti yogata. But the varnashram is actually meant to structure everybody. Goodness, passion, ignorance. We can't expect that the people in the mode of ignorance will become devotees. But you know, we have to structure them to create the perfect human society. That is why we need the Varnashram actually. Varnashram is not for the devotees. Devotees are beyond Varnashram. Because Varnashram is gradually leading one to Karmakanda, to Gyanakanda. Karmakanda is for Sudra, Vaishyas and Kshatriyas. But Gyanakanda is predominantly for the Brahmanas. But beyond Gyanakanda is Bhakti. So this, therefore Bhakti is beyond mode of goodness. Devotional service is transcendental to the modes of material. Anyway, so the point that I was trying to make at that time, that 50%, so we can see what a massive work is left. Now, we can look at it from another angle also, another point of view. What Srila Prabhupada has achieved, if that is 50%, can you imagine what is means the other 50% is, right? That other 50% means the entire world has become Krishna conscious, or entire world is under the influence of Krishna consciousness. So, anyway, through ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada has made all the arrangements. Srila Prabhupada designed that the mission will continue through ISKCON. And yes, ultimately Varnashram Dharma will be established through ISKCON. It will be done through ISKCON. It's not going to happen, you know, outside of ISKCON. Because eventually what will happen, you know, ISKCON will establish its influence so much so that, you know, the government, different governments will be at least guided by ISKCON. And the way, and it will, I'm confident that it will happen in due course of time. Some powerful individual will take up the mission, and they will, you know, influence people. They themselves prevail. I mean, the time will come, you know, when the army generals, you know, leaders of the states, you know, High Court judges, Supreme Court judges, they all will become ISKCON devotees. I mean, then it will be another scene. Why not? If we have come this far, then why can't go any further, you know, to that extent? So the point, yeah, that point I was trying to make is that ISKCON is one family. ISKCON is one family, and we have to remain as a family. There lies our actual strength. And that link has to be established through Srila Prabhupada, with Prabhupada in the center. And that's why Prabhupada also was so emphatic about his position as a founder acharya. He did not really care at all for any kind of recognition. But his position as a founder acharya, you know, he was very, very emphatic. And, you know, like at times, I used to wonder why Prabhupada, while he is so detached, is so, you know, so particular about this title. But later on, you know, I realized why. Because in order to hold this institution together, Prabhupada's position has to be established properly. And that is how ISKCON will continue. Like, in retrospect, let's consider another situation, you know. There had been, you know, some individuals who kind of, at least to some, appeared to be very exalted spiritual personalities. And they rallied behind him. Actually, many ISKCON devotees left ISKCON to join them. But then we saw, like, when that personality was present on the planet, you know, it seemed they were doing very well. But after the personality left, you know, it disintegrated, dissolved. In some corners, you know, like in Gauriya Math, as they're doing, they're maintaining their spiritual life, but that, you know, that drive and that impetus is not there. You know, the dynamism is not there. Whereas in ISKCON, we are maintaining, we are continuing 35 years after Prabhupada's disappearance. And it's not only continuing, it's getting better. Like, look what is happening in Russia. Look what's happening in Ukraine. Look what's happening in Poland, Hungary. Some places there are difficult, there had been difficulties. And that also because they were flourishing, but the leader fell down. And as a result of that, we made the crisis. We faced the crisis. But then also that brings up another point. Like, and that is, you know, like the that actually establishes or confirms the importance of establishing Srila Prabhupada's, our relationship with Srila Prabhupada. Because the emphasis, the main emphasis was that you know, the their whole spiritual life was resting on their spiritual master. When the spiritual master fell down, they lost faith in their spiritual life. And they left. But if from the beginning, if we made them understand that actually their spiritual life is linked with Srila Prabhupada, ISKCON is Srila Prabhupada's institution, they are a part of ISKCON institution, and their guru were representing Srila Prabhupada and connecting them to Srila Prabhupada, then if at all the guru had any difficulty, those individuals wouldn't have been affected. As we have seen, like in some cases when the guru had spiritual difficulty, but the disciples who stayed in ISKCON, their spiritual life remained intact. So, anyway, so the point actually is that ISKCON is flourishing. I mean, the way things are happening in India, it's inconceivable. 20 years back, we couldn't imagine such a thing could happen. It's growing like anything. Our recognition of our society, respect for our society is increasing amazingly. And mind you, practically, it's just the beginning. It's just the beginning. We can't imagine what's going to happen another 20, 30, 40 years from now. So this is how it becomes quite clear that, you know, this is how it's going to happen. Like ISKCON as an institution is going to spread all over the world, you know, motivating people to become devotees, and it will keep on growing. Who could ever imagine that things would happen the way it's happening in Russia today? 25 years back, could you imagine? Like Russia, to give you an example, recently there was in Ukraine, they have a festival every year in summer. In September they take it, they have it. Last year, in Ukraine, there were 7,000 devotees participating in that program. In Russia, in Black Sea, there are 5,000 devotees. So when 7,000 devotees participate, you can well imagine what must be the number of devotees there. And this is just the beginning. So this is how Srila Prabhupada created the perfect arrangement for the movement to grow and continue. And now we have the responsibility to protect this institution for the benefit of the whole world. Sort of, we got into a I would like to have questions. Yeah, please. Yeah, please, please.
Thank you very much. You gave a different dimension. It's so inspiring.
Yeah, like you all have to carry the mission. You see, we all are getting old, and soon we'll disappear.
Time, you could have done.
Yeah, good. Very good point. You see, then again we see the expertise of Srila Prabhupada's, you know, management. You see, Prabhupada created the GBC naturally with a handful of devotees. But as the structure, Prabhupada actually gave the emphasis on the temple and the temple president, or you can say temple management. So the growth is going to take place through the temples and, you know, temple, you know, managed by the temple. Prabhupada didn't want the GBCs to manage the temples. Prabhupada wanted the GBCs to watch that the spiritual standard is maintained. His will is executed. Now just consider, there is room for so everyone, as during Prabhupada's time it was happening. Prabhupada gave the freedom to everybody, go, open centers. And devotees did that. Young devotees went to different corners of the world, and I'm sure that's going to happen also. Like, it'll start happening. Like, young ones need a dynamic challenge. You know, they want adventure. They want to achieve something, right? And there is, you know, a wide open field for that. Go and open temple. Go out and preach. In a way, there was, you see, because of our immaturity, there had been some, you know, mistakes also. Like, there was a time when the temple presidents did not want other temples to open in the same area. Because, you know, they're afraid that, you know, their collection will be, their fundraising will be affected. But now in GBC we have passed the thing that in one city there can be many temples. Not that one city, one temple. Prabhupada wanted temples in every block. So this is how, you know, it's going to grow. And it's the youth will make it happen. Like, as we were saying, third generation. Yes, probably this third generation will get, you know, this inspiration for this kind of achievements. Go out, open temples, spread the movement.
So, you see in America, so most of the third generation, you can understand that most of the community, you see in the past 10 years, when Prabhupada left second generation, they spread all over the world. And then now, when he went to India, and what Prabhupada mentioned was that he wanted to see it in Japan, so that he can learn from the other people. So now that they can spread the movement now,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, I will say that this is another phase of our development. Okay, I recall one in, you see, that was in 1989. I went to South Africa for the first time. They actually requested me to come. That year I was the chairman of the GBC. And they had some problems, so they invited me to come. And they arranged a banquet inviting all the important members from the congregation. So in the banquet, my speech was actually centered on that Krishna has planted you all Indians in different parts of the world to assist Srila Prabhupada's mission to spread this movement. And today also, I feel the same way. And you know, like it was so effective actually, you know, that speech. Right after that, you know, one gentleman wanted to see me. And he came and told me that he was actually planning to emigrate to Australia. But after hearing me, he decided not to do that, but stay on in South Africa and help the movement. And he did that, and he has become a very big support. Just to give you an example, today, just before the class, we were discussing about Mayapur, Temple of Vedic Planetarium. And, you know, like fundraising. And it's a difficult job. We need a lot of money. We need $45 million to complete the project. Ambarish Prabhu came up with $30 million, and that is already spent. Anyway, so I was just about to tell, which I did not, but I was thinking about to tell Prema Sindhu that one person from South Africa, just recently he pledged $500,000 to this project, and it is that person, the same person, like who decided not to go to Australia, but carry on and help the movement. And it's on his own. We didn't even start our campaign. Last time I went, I was telling them about this project. And anyway, in a similar note, I will say, Krishna has brought you all in this country with a specific purpose, to help this movement grow. There was a time when there was all Americans and no Indians. Prabhupada sometimes used to lament that everyone is coming but the Indians are not coming. So there was a time when Prabhupada himself was lamenting that Indians are not coming. But today, wherever you go, whether it's America, Europe, Australia, all mostly Indians. So that's why I was saying that it's one phase that we are going through. There was a time when it was all American. And now it's all Indian practically. And then time will come when all Indians and all Americans will be together. It'll happen. But we have to prepare ourselves for that. We have to make an effort to achieve that. Like, yes, we have to emphasize local preaching. In a way, often I remind people that it is their responsibility, that they should make an effort to preach to the local people. And I give an example in that respect. When Prabhupada went to Kenya, Nairobi, they invited all the important Indians to meet Srila Prabhupada. So after that meeting, Srila Prabhupada called his disciples who were all preaching there. And Prabhupada said, "Did I come to Africa to meet the Indians?" He said, "Where are the Africans?" And then the next morning they went and brought the Africans. So the point is that unless and until we influence the local people, we involve the local people, our movement is not going to grow. In Russia, it's growing. In Hungary, it's growing. Why? Because the local people are involved. So we have to involve local people. And we have to make an effort for that. Once I was in London, you see, they have a program after Janmashtami called is it Volunteers Night? Volunteers Night. Yeah. In London, you see, the congregation is very active in Bhaktivedanta manner. And a month before Janmashtami, they get active to organize, prepare the field, do all kinds of things, you know. And you know what they do? From their work, they come straight to the manor. They render their service. Then they get their prasad, and then they go home. You know, very committed. About 500 families get involved in that way. And so, during Janmashtami, you know, they all are so busy. For a month, actually, they remain busy. They can't really do anything else, you know. As I said, from the office, they come straight to the manor. And then render their service, and, you know, 2-3 hours of service, and then they take dinner and then they go home. So what they do is, after Janmashtami, they have a big program for these they call them volunteers. And so I was there one night, in the volunteer night, and you naturally, you know, like, practically all the volunteers were Indians. So I, in course of my speech, I just told them, it's very nice that you all have come forward to help the movement and doing it in such a wonderful way. But if Prabhupada was here, I feel that Prabhupada would have asked, we are in London, but where are the English people? I mean, how come there is so few English people here? So that is one thing we have to take into serious consideration. Yes, Indians are coming forward. It's very good, because it is your own thing. Just by being born in India, or being born in Indian families, or being born in Indian culture, you have come very close to Krishna consciousness. So it's very easy for us to adopt Krishna consciousness, accept Krishna consciousness. But our business is to spread it all over. So that means, you know, we have to get local people to be involved. And we can understand that it's a difficult time to preach to the Westerners, because they're so caught up with their, you know, materialistic prosperity. They're so much caught up with their mundane involvements, that they don't have any time for Krishna consciousness. At the most, they're doing yoga and things, you know, but that's all mundane. They're doing yoga not for spiritual advancement. They're doing yoga for their material benefits, physical, psychological. But a time will come, Krishna will create that situation. And we have to be prepared for that. Just as Srila Prabhupada created the situation for Srila Prabhupada when he came here. You know, look at the American youth at that time. They rejected the American culture, and they are looking for a positive alternative. And at that time Srila Prabhupada came. And Prabhupada gave them the real positive alternative, Krishna consciousness. So similarly, I'm sure, you know, in course of time, Krishna will make this arrangement. Krishna will make the arrangement. You know, probably what will happen, which is already happening in Europe, there's going to be a massive unemployment. Massive unemployment. Already there is 50% youth unemployment in France. 25% unemployment in youth in London, in England. Can you imagine, like, where practically unemployment rate was zero? 25% of the youth are unemployed. That means educated, qualified individuals don't have a job. I mean, just to give you an example, one of my disciples' son, you know, he did his pilot training, got fully qualified, couldn't get a job. You know, even as a pilot, as a prof, you know, like, it is such a specialized job. And eventually what he is doing, he got into software, computer. See, this is the situation, you know, like. And this is, world is in a pretty good condition right now. Give it a few more years, you know, we can't really imagine what may happen. Like 10 years, 20 years from now. You know, what's going to be the job situation? The number of jobs are limited. But so many individuals are getting very, very highly qualified. So, you know, and then they'll be ready for us. Krishna consciousness will be the positive alternative for them. And one thing is, in Krishna consciousness, there's no room for unemployment. That is what Varnashram is. Everybody has some role to play in the society. Everybody has a role to play. So there is no unemployment. So that's how we can see how Krishna consciousness will flourish eventually. Well, to tell you frankly, I don't really delve into that. Whether it is 9,500 years or 10,500 years, what difference does it make? Either you or I will not be here. So what really matters is that now that we are here, let us contribute whatever little we can towards that achievement. Whether it's 5,000 or 50,000, 10,000 or 200,000, doesn't matter. But the point is that Krishna consciousness is the only solution to all material problems. Question. Why are you sitting there? Come. Good point, but my take in that will be, these political leaders won't do anything. They won't be able to do anything. Because the moment they start to sing a different tune from their political agenda, political party's agenda, they'll be kicked out. Therefore, I mean, if you go that far, then I'll say that eventually ISKCON has to have, or the devotees of Krishna conscious devotees have to have their own political party. Because do you think BJP will push our agenda? Do you think Congress will push our agenda? No. It has to be our own agenda. Anyway, I mean, that's, you know, my response to that. Because I have seen these political people are, you know, they, I mean, they're unreliable, to say the least. They're not, even if they become convinced about Krishna consciousness, first of all, you know, they have their own agenda. Even if they're nice to us, it is not because of, you know, anything else but to kind of, you know, win their own benefit. And you brought up a good point, you know, that is the difference between monarchy and democracy. A monarch could take up the agenda and push it through, as Constantine did. As Ashok did with Buddhism. These people can actually achieve all kinds of wonderful things. But in democracy that will never happen, because they can't push their own agenda, I mean, own agenda. They have to go along with the people, go along with the mass. What mass wants, that's what they'll go. Now, if that is the case, then when the majority of the population becomes Krishna conscious, yes, why should we depend upon them? Then we'll have to have our own party, and our own people will be elected in the, you know, in the power. So, and that will happen. That will happen, like, you know, the way Krishna consciousness is spreading, you know, like eventually people will become Krishna conscious. Majority of the people will become Krishna conscious. Chandrasekhar had a question before.
Is
No, that point is true, correct, yeah. Like, you see, when the Americans go and present it to the Americans, it has a better effect. They can relate to it. And yes, and that's what Prabhupada did. He first motivated a handful of Americans. And it's they who went out and did things. Right? And the thing is, you know, how it will happen, we don't know. But we have to consider how to make it happen. What can I do to help? Right? What can I do? That should be our concern. And the thing is, you know, like both way it will work. Like in a way you can also see, okay, say that's why both Indians and Americans have to work together in a field like this, or local people and the Indians have to work together. You see how local people will bring them, motivate the other local people. And then when they see that the Indians are presenting it, they will see that, yes, this is the real, genuine stuff, which is actually Srila Prabhupada established. So this is how we have to work together. And that's on, then only it will work. Like Prabhupada gave the classic example in that respect. You know the story of lame man and blind man? Lame man is useless by himself. And a blind man is useless by himself. But a blind man who doesn't have eyes have strong legs. And if he takes the lame man on his back, and then they work together. Right? So that is the policy that we have to follow. Lame man and blind man. Well, Prabhupada did mention that West is spiritually blind and Indians are materially lame. That may be, but in the ultimate issue, the you know, Indians have that spiritual inclination inherent in them. Right. Whereas the Westerners, they are very dynamic. Materially, they are very progressive. India's material progress is simply with the help of the West. Without America's help, India couldn't prosper like this the way they did today. It's because all the companies are just outsourcing from India. That's why India has become rich. So there also, you know, it's a lame man, blind man collaboration.
So, you know, this idea of the whole subconscious and the West, it could be debated.
That's where the devotees had to leave India and come to the West to practice Krishna consciousness. Look, all of them. In India, they couldn't become devotees. They had to come here to become devotees. Anyway, it doesn't matter, you know, it's all Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's plan. We simply have to become an instrument in his hands. We have to play our respective roles. That's what is needed. Yeah, India is in a pathetic state. And you know why? Because Kali attacks from the head. The first place that Kali attacked is India. The first people that Kali attacked are the Brahmanas. And today you go to India, the most holy places have become the place of all kinds of sinful activities. In most cases. Except Ujjain. That place is actually very, very nicely protected. They say that Lord Shiva is actually protecting it. It's his place. No industry develops there. There had been many industries like, you know, Shriram Mills went there and many other companies went. They had to close down. Even the government set up soybean plant, you know, investing something like 200 crores. It's shut down. So, you know, Lord Shiva is protecting that place from. This is Lord Shiva's place, and also the place of Sandipani Muni. Yeah, what is your question? Not only just purity, I will say that he was chosen by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to accomplish that. Naturally he was pure, but it's even more than that. That is, you know, that indicates that Prabhupada's position is something very, very... Well, I often think of this one, that bhubi grinanti ye bhuri dajana tava kathamritam. Gopis are singing that the nectarian narrations of your past, of your activities and pastimes extinguishes the tapta jivanam, people who are burning in this material condition, there, it soothes their burning condition, extinguishes the fire of material existence. Tapta jivanam, srimad atatam, it brings, your kathamritam brings all good fortune. Kobibhi riritam. The most exalted personalities sing these glories of yours. Kalma shapaham, it removes all the impurities of the heart. Shavana mangalam, just by hearing one receives all auspiciousness. And Srimad Atatam, it gives us the greatest good fortune. Bhubi Grinanti, the one who spreads this Kathamritam, is the most munificent personality. You see, King Prataprudra was singing this song to Chaitanya Charitamrita, to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. when he was resting in Balgandi after the Rath Yatra, I mean during the Rath Yatra, when the Rath got stopped. He was singing it to him to indicate that you are the one who is distributing this Krishna consciousness. You are the most munificent personality. But you are depriving me of your munificence. Indicating that you are giving it to everybody. You are creating this good fortune to everyone. You are so munificent. Bhuri Dajana. But only Pratap Rudra is deprived of your mercy. Now, when Mahaprabhu heard that, he jumped up and he embraced King Pratap Rudra, whom he didn't even want to see. And he kept on repeating, Bhurida, Bhurida. Yes, indeed. He is the greatest giver. Now, when Mahaprabhu accepted that statement, he didn't take it because, see, Pratap Rudra said it in context of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's accepting it was not in context of himself. He was indicating that, yes, somebody who will do that, he is a most munificent person. Now see, who is the personality who spread it all over the world? And in a way, I feel that this is what is indicating, you know, Srila Prabhupada's identity. Yes, yeah. Bhakti Vinod Thakur predicted that a Senapati Bhakta will come. A general will come and lead the army. Not only lead the army, he'll raise the army. He'll raise the army and then he'll lead the army. Okay. One of the very important instructions that I received from Srila Prabhupada was, at that time I was very new to the movement, but you know, I had access to Prabhupada asked me to translate his books. So I started to translate, and practically every day I used to go to Srila Prabhupada and show. So it's one such occasion. No, it was not the translation actually. I took the letters. Prabhupada asked me to reply his letters that came first in Bengali. He gave me a stack of Bengali letters. And then he gave me a stack of Hindi letters to reply. Anyway, it was during, I took the letters to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was having a massage on the roof in Mayapur. And so Prabhupada, I read the letters out, Prabhupada corrected them. And I thought, you know, like, let me take this opportunity and just be there, you know, just to be near Prabhupada. So I was sitting there, And Prabhupada was having the massage. Harisori Prabhu was massaging him from the back. Prabhupada was sitting, and I was sitting there. And Prabhupada told me, just on his own, he just started to speak. For many, many lifetimes, you have been trying to enjoy. But you can see that you are still not satisfied. So just offer this life to Krishna. Just offer this life to Krishna and see what happens. And then he told me, don't get involved with any woman. And in this way Prabhupada spoke. And then finally Prabhupada said, just offer this life to Krishna and see what happens. Even if nothing happens, what's the loss? It's one lifetime out of so many. It's one life out of so many. So, and that was a very important instruction. Prabhupada just asked me to offer this life to Krishna. I don't know whether I have been able to do that properly, but at least trying to do that. Another incident that is very deeply etched in my mind, in my memory, is in Bombay. One day Srila Prabhupada asked me one morning to get him some orange juice. So in the kitchen there was no orange. So I had to go, and those days, you know, in that area, Juhu, near the temple, there was nothing. So I had to go to quite a distance, get the oranges. I came back, and when I was making the oranges, the bell rang. Prabhupada used to call us by ringing a bell. It was an electric bell, and the switch was on Prabhupada's table. And it used to ring in that passage, just next to the kitchen. And Prabhupada rang the bell, so I just ran to Prabhupada's room. He said, what happened to the oranges? So I said, Prabhupada, I'm just bringing it. So I just quickly tried to make. Now the bell rang again. And this time the bell just kept on ringing. Just the way the bell was ringing, I knew how angry Prabhupada must have been. You know, like. So I quickly took the glass on a silver plate and I came to Prabhupada. As I opened the door, you know, I heard Prabhupada very loudly saying that he didn't want oranges, I could take it away. But you know, that time I just couldn't retreat. You know? So with the plate in my hand, with the glass of orange juice, I just walked up to Srila Prabhupada and kept on holding it in front of him. For some time Prabhupada would pick it up. He was so upset with me. So then finally he picked it up and started to drink. So when he was drinking, then I realized that I, in a hurry, I forgot to bring a bowl of water that Prabhupada would need to wash his hand, wash his mouth. So I ran to the kitchen, got the water and brought it. Then I realized that I forgot to bring the napkin. So I didn't, this time I didn't even go to the kitchen. I walked up to Prabhupada's wardrobe and got a small towel and was wiping Prabhupada's mouth. Then Prabhupada started to speak. You see, you are trying to serve me so nicely, but I so often chastise you. Please don't mind. You see, when one becomes old, one becomes short-tempered. When Prabhupada chastised me, I didn't feel bad, you know. But when Prabhupada started to speak like that, you know, like, I mean, I just felt so, you know, my heart was cracked. I tried to say something. I wanted to tell Prabhupada, please don't speak like that. But I couldn't, because my voice was choked. And then I told Prabhupada, finally I managed to speak up. Prabhupada, I make mistakes, and if you don't correct me, then what will happen to me? So this is another incident that's very and many a times Prabhupada actually used to tell me about the importance of unity, the way we should learn to work together. You see, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was Prabhupada's secretary at that time. And we were working, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was, he's a wonderful, very wonderful devotee. But sometimes Tamal Krishna Maharaj used to get very angry. He was known for his temper. In one such occasion, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was chastising me. And then when Prabhupada heard, because it's happening all in that area, you see. In Bombay you saw Prabhupada's quarters. And just, you know, Tamal Krishna Maharaj and I were staying in the room just next to Prabhupada's room. Then the other room was Upendra Prabhu's room. Then there was the kitchen. And then there was the bathroom. And then there was the, you know, area, which was the reception area. Anyway, this was happening in the reception area. I also forgot why Tamal Krishna Maharaj was so upset with me. But I was feeling very bad. Then Prabhupada, you know, when I went to Prabhupada after a little while, I was still feeling very bad. No, that was in Mayapur. Now that time it was not, it was kind of a joke. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, one day he woke me up and said a brahmachari shouldn't sleep during the day. So one day I found him sleeping. And so when I went to Prabhupada, Prabhupada heard, I mean, and seeing me, Prabhupada also could probably make out, you know, like, and then Prabhupada started to speak, and he said, you see, the real sign of advancement is not what a big position you have. The real sign of advancement is how much you have learned to tolerate. And then Prabhupada kept on speaking, like, when you work together with many others, then you have to learn to tolerate. And that is the real sign of advancement. Another time Tamalkrishna Maharaj cursed me. I was a brahmachari at that time. He said, you'll get married. That was the curse. I was feeling so bad. So I went and told Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, you're already married. So you're married to Krishna. So nice to be with Prabhupada, actually. Also with Tamalkrishna Maharaj. He was very, in one hand, sometimes, you know, he would be quite, he used to have a name also among his peers, Tamalkrishna Maharaj. They used to call him Hot Tamal. And the nice thing about Tamalkrishna Maharaj is that, like, if somebody did something to me, then he was like a ball of fire. Like, he was so protective. The other day in Cleveland, Radhanath Maharaj was telling me, just before leaving, of course those days no one realized that Tamalkrishna Maharaj would leave like that. Tamalkrishna Maharaj was telling Radhanath Maharaj that how much he was looking forward to working together with me in establishing an university in Calcutta. And Radhanath Maharaj was telling that how Tamalkrishna Maharaj was reminiscing those days when we are serving Srila Prabhupada together. We can look at it in two ways. One is obviously, you know, Kali will try to prevent people to become devotees. And these are actually his arrangements. That, you know, even those who are trying to come to Krishna consciousness, Kali is driving them away or taking them away. And the other way to look at it is also, you see, when Prabhupada came, due to his causeless mercy, he created an inconceivable good fortune for this world. And, you know, so many people received his mercy and became devotees. But now, you know, devotional service, which is so rare, is becoming rare this way. Like, those who are coming, they're put into a test. Let's see how qualified you are to take to Krishna consciousness.
So it's a different type of test.
It's a test, yeah. But we have to create their good fortune. We have to make them understand. Like, as you said, you know, like, you know, which society doesn't have difficulty in this age, you know? And, you know, it was a young movement, many individuals made mistakes. But are you going to look at what happened to some individuals? Or are you going to look at the mercy that Srila Prabhupada is distributing?
So many devotees have purified and have been back
yeah.
to God, have
right.
done so much. But the thing is, their activities are not so prominent on the website.
Right. Right. That's another thing. Like, we should have been more active in the internet. And it's happening. Like, you know, we are trying to. But collectively or as an institution, we haven't really been very active in the internet. Like, ISKCON hasn't been very active in the internet. You know, these people have, you know, something to criticize about. But there are so many other activities that is really glorious. We are not presenting it. Desire Tree is doing some good job, but you know, like, anyway, we are, another thing is, you know, devotees don't like to blow their own trumpet. Because you feel, the world will see what we are doing, you know, and those people, you know, like, they have, you know, they're just barking. I mean, I feel bad to say, like a bunch of dogs, you know. You know, they're barking, but there is no substance in their barking. Like, what are they, you know? And they don't have much to say, like, it's the old thing that they are just, you know, repeatedly, you know. It's like a worn-out record, you know, like just going on and on and on. But still, you see, people are coming. Like, many individuals are, you know, overcoming that obstacle and coming to Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, we should make an effort to educate them or inform them, you know. And those who want to criticize, they can, they will. Criticize, but who will be affected by that? Who will take it seriously? That reminds me, one ISKCON devotee who defected from ISKCON, you know, like, and he joined some Gaudiya Math. In one Rath Yatra in Los Angeles, one of our leaders Badri Narayanpur, who is the GBC of that area. He overheard that that sannyasi was telling some people, you know, how ISKCON is dead. Now this is the thing about these people, you know. I'm saying some of these people, right? They'll come to ISKCON program and criticize ISKCON activities. Anyway, Badri Narayan, he's sharp like a razor, you know. So he just confronted him. And he said, look, so many people are chanting and dancing in ecstasy. Look at the queue, so many people are waiting to take prasad. Look, so many people are just enjoying this festivity. And even you have come here, and you say ISKCON is dead? You don't even have eyes to see what is dead and what is alive. So take prasad. Hare Krishna. Thank you all very much. Had a very nice time here with you all. And Prem Vilas Prabhu, it's nice that I finally got to meet you also.
Was a good fortune. I had seen you on YouTube. I had seen your videos. And it was a good fortune to see you in front of us.
Thank you.
I can't even actually believe it. I think that I'm seeing something real.